Robin Wright of The New Yorker has covered Iran since before the 1979 revolution. For almost 50 years, she's been reporting on the struggle for human rights and democracy. Could aerial bombing by the US and Israel bring real change?
I don't think anyone can answer that question, including the Trump administration. It's unclear what it means by regime change and whether this is the Venezuela model where the head of state is taken out, but the system remains in place. Obviously, the supreme leader's death changes a lot in Tehran. The three-man council that's now in control is still part of the old system. It includes the current president, a member of the assembly of experts that's supposed to elect the next supreme leader, and the head of the judiciary. So it's not clear at all whether U.S. military might could ever change the system altogether. And of course, President Trump has called on Iranians to take to the streets and challenge the government, to topple the government, when it's not clear at all that the Iranians are united or organized enough to create an alternative or to topple the regime without, you know, some kind of military force on the ground. And it's clear that the majority of Americans do not support that.
Yeah, well, this is a very perceptive point that you make, Robin, because in your most recent piece for The New Yorker, we'll put links to all of these on our website, by the way, you say that there has been for decades now a struggle between Iran's identity as an Islamic Republic. So do the opponents of the Ayatollah, presumably the ones cheering in the streets in Tehran, do they envisage Iran as Islamic or as a republic? Because you've always pointed to this tension there.
Yes, and of course, that's the struggle within the system as it is. Is the Islamic Republic of Iran, first and foremost, an Islamic state with the Sharia as the ultimate source of law and the supreme leader as the ultimate power? Or is it a republic where the constitution, which is based on French and Belgian law, and elected officials have the ultimate say on policy? But of course, it's not clear that the majority of Iranians still want that system. And we don't have any opinion polls. We have only the kind of reaction we've seen since the first U.S. and Israeli strikes. And you've seen a bifurcated response. Those who are dancing in the streets and honking their horns, and large numbers who turned out to mourn the supreme leader. We simply don't know who's next, what's next, or how we get there. And that's, I think, one of the great travesties of this moment.
Yeah, the regime released its own footage of really mass demonstrations of people mourning the killing of Ayatollah Khamenei, presumably to counteract the multitude of images of Iranians in Iran and certainly in the diaspora celebrating. But would there be a significant number of Iranians truly mourning Khamenei's death?
You know, nobody can answer that. An Iranian political scientist told me several months ago that 80% of the population opposed the regime. But there is also among Shiites this strong sense of martyrdom. And the supreme leader, you know, was 86. He's had cancer in the past. You know, there was always going to be a transition. But the idea that a supreme leader or a figure, a religious cleric, was martyred by an outside government and a military force may rally more people kind of to the system. Or, you know, again, this is where it's hard to tell. One point of interest is that the rule of thumb is that autocracies or authoritarian rule can survive if they have 30% of the population behind them, which means they can man the security forces, run a bureaucracy, and either tax or bribe people to support the system economically. Now, we're at that point where whether it's 30% support or 20% support really is critical in terms of determining the numbers who would turn out to topple the regime. Mm. I wish I had answers, and I'm sure you do too.
But I mean, your perceptions here, Robin, are fascinating. That will to martyrdom that you've mentioned there, well, first of all, how widespread is it within the Iranian system, within the mindset of those who are very committed to the revolution, and how much does that will to martyrdom, as it were, frustrate any attempts by others outside to remake Iran?
Well, remember, the idea of martyrdom goes back to the 7th century and the creation or the founding of Shiite Islam, which broke off from the mainstream Sunnis. And Shiites believe that it is better to die fighting for justice than to live with injustice. And the commemorations of the founding of Shiism is celebrated in the 21st century still. So that's, again, when we try to judge what is the mindset of Iranians inside regime, how much does this sense of Shiite persecution, this sense of Shiites being a minority, being surrounded by the Sunni world, being challenged by Israel or the West, how much is it going to shape their public attitudes and actions? So we're dealing not just with the death of Ayatollah Khamenei, we're dealing with the Shiite trends since the founding of this branch of Islam.
You met Ayatollah Khamenei several decades ago when he came to the United Nations. Did you detect in him someone who was deeply committed to the ideological fervor of the revolution, or was he a power broker in that sense?
No, I think he was a total, utter ideologue. He fell under the sway of Ayatollah Khomeini, who was the founder of the revolution, the leader that toppled the monarchy when he was still a teenager. He was arrested 6 times by the monarchy. He has a deep sense of commitment to Sharia law, to the Islamic Republic, and to the theology of this theocracy. And so there's no question that he was totally committed. This was a man who was very unworldly. I thought he was a bit naive. I thought he had a certain defensive arrogance when it came to U.S. interventions in Iran, furious at the United States. But also, this was his only trip to the United States and his only trip that we know of to the West. This is a man who I don't think, unlike Ayatollah Khomeini, who spent 14 years in Paris, he didn't have a sense of the outside world. How do you engage in international diplomacy?
The first book I ever read about the Middle East was in 1990. It was your book, In the Name of God. You have been with this story since its birth. Does this seem to you to have come the full arc within your extraordinary career, Robin?
Yes, and the question is there enough rage based on religion that sustains the regime despite this massive military operation? Or is this the end of the kind of extremism that has manifested itself in multiple groups across the region, across the Middle East and beyond? We have to wait to see. Again, I live in Washington, D.C., and covered the region now for more than a half century. I am bewildered by what the Trump administration is seeking. It's very hard to tell, I think even among Iranians, what happens next.
Very good to speak with you. Robin Wright of The New Yorker. We'll put links to all of Robin's articles and to her website. Thanks for coming back to the Religion and Ethics Report, Robin.
Thanks so much.
And you're with me, Andrew West.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.